and gentlemen, we're live again, but the perceptive listeners among you might notice we really did make a podcast this week. But this is a special thing we're doing. First, I want to introduce a couple of guests of mine. Guests, introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Michael, one of the founders of Cardsphere.
And I'm Ted Rodney, another founder of Cardsphere. Thanks for having us on.
So, we're going to have a small talk about the Cardsphere, the project that these two fine gentlemen are doing. But I want to know one thing beforehand. How the hell did you even find out about us?
MTGcast.com.
Yeah, but there's like a bunch of the podcasts there on, so...
Yeah, absolutely. So I basically have been sampling a lot of podcasts and YouTubers, looking for people that might be helpful, helping us grow our community. I used to listen to basically every podcast on mtgcast.com, but I'm finding more and more these days I have less time for absorbing the content as I'm trying to build the community for Cardsphere.
That seems to be a growing trend, you're not having time for anything.
That's true. We all have day jobs, and so we can work on Cardsphere evenings, weekends, lunchtimes.
That is absolutely true. These days I'm responsible for writing the bulk of the code that is behind Cardsphere, and it's a job that takes a lot of hours out of my day, and a lot of times I'm doing 16 hours days, and I don't have weekends anymore. So that's how it works.
So you're dedicated. Yeah, you were going to say.
Yeah, we're definitely happy doing this. I like it. I like magic. I like magic-related projects. I like writing code. I like learning a lot, and I like meeting new people and interacting with them. So it works really well for me.
Yeah, and we've been very lucky that even before we had a launch product, we've been developing a fantastic community on Reddit and on Discord. So, you know, it's really it is hard work, but it's enjoyable work as we get to interact with a lot of people who have all the same interests as we do, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, really fulfilling as you can see the project starting to succeed.
Okay, but before we move on, I think we need to tell people what the hell your project actually is. What is Cardsphere?
So Cardsphere is an online trading, buying and selling platform for Magic the Gathering cards. And we're unique in that we take the best aspects of many of the precursor platforms that were out there and mix them together into what we believe is the best possible whole. So it's a push mechanic, so you're choosing to send out your cards. And it's based on the U.S. dollar, so there's no magical internet points, which have led to issues with other platforms. And we handle all the package matching and the heavy lifting for people so that they can make sure they get the best bang for their buck and move the right cards to the right people.
Okay, and you said it works on, it's based on American dollar. What does that mean for an average user?
So for the average user, it means that they are confident that they can always get out of the system when they want to. So people are put their cash in to get started with Cardsphere. You deposit it into your account using Stripe, or you can just send out cards to other people, which then you will take some money from their account once the card's received and start building your account up that way. When you're ready, if you want to get the cash out of the system, you can request a cash out in any amount. We do charge people 10% or $10, whichever is larger. So we recommend people go with cash outs of at least $100. And we pay you out using PayPal.
Yeah, and it also ensures that we're never going to run into a situation like some other platforms where their internet points have devalued a lot. It creates an open market where the money flows freely in and out and the cards are flowing freely. So really it reduces the risk for all participants.
We've been operating for 4 months and our the size of our economy, and we don't discuss the very specifics of it. While we do try to be very open about everything, there are some stats we don't give out, but the economy has been steadily growing since day one, and that includes us having already cashed out between, what, $20,000 and $30,000?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah. But even with that, you can see that the economy is growing, and we do give stats that indicate that on our front page, so people can check it out and see the total amount of cards or the total value of cards that have been traded, as well as the amount of or the worth of the cards that are currently in transit.
In the mail.
Yeah. So I think as of this moment, we've got close to $20,000 in the mail.
Yeah. Yesterday we had a little milestone where we broke $20,000 in transit, and it was always almost $21,000 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So
now I'm curious, because some of your competitors, they were mostly U.S. based, which is, you know, to be expected because most of the magic market is in the U.S. But since I'm a European, how big is your European market?
It's not as big as we would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting there. It's growing. It is a fraction of U.S. market. That is for sure. It might be our second market after United States and Canada, maybe with Japan being our third or fourth close. We know that we have a lot of potential on the European market.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And we're talking about the various ways that we can get into the European market. Right now, what we're seeing from Europeans mostly is that a lot of them are looking to supplement activity that's happening on Magic Card Market, and they want to be able to deal with global trade partners as well, rather than being locked into Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
We think Magic Card Market is a fantastic system. You know, we give it high praise, but we think that there's a lot of potential to work with Europeans and get the cards flowing globally.
Mm-hmm. Because Magic Card Market is awesome for us Europeans, but as you said, you're kind of locked into Europe. You can't actually get anything from across the pond, to say it like that.
A lot of times, Magic cards have imbalanced prices, say in Japan versus Europe versus United States.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it is beneficial to request cards, say, in Japanese language.
I was just about to say that, yes.
Yeah, at essentially a lower price than you can get them in Europe or the United States.
Because the thing, one of the things I'm really invested in is getting as many as Japanese cards of the cards I want to as possible. But with Magic Card Market, that's way more difficult to make it.
Right, and that's the other aspect. If you're a collector or you're trying to acquire some bling or foreign languages for your awesome EDH decks, requesting from those countries or procuring those cards on the global market is something that you often want to do.
Yeah, and if we're talking about EDH players liking the, you know, the full art promotional cards, the judge promos,
Japanese foils,
all that stuff, you need to be able to get into the much larger American market. That's where a lot of those cards are sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge we have is incentivizing people to start trading internationally, because we're both in Canada. Our partner, Tom, is in Texas. But the two of us in Canada know that we do not get as many cards even as the Americans do. So we just this morning, every Saturday morning, we discuss all the feature requests and things that we've discussed with our users over the past week. And one of the things we decided to do is start to be a little bit more free with where we put the usernames country of origin. So we're going to start showing flags on a couple of additional pages so that, for example, people can realize, hey, look at this, the best offers for Walking Ballista or whatever the card would be are all coming from Croatia, so we better send one out to Igor.
But now we're talking about your page. One thing that's actually wonderful, it's nice and simplistic, the whole layout.
Mm.
I'm really loving it.
Yeah, we've been drawing our inspiration from the original Puka and some of the websites like Reddit, you know, simple to the point type of thing. We were trying to stay away as much as possible from the type of UIs like the new Puka Trade, heavy and a lot of times difficult to use. So the choice of technology and the implementation is deliberate. We're also we also like to think that our mobile experience is very nice, and we definitely have users that are only using CardSphere via mobile devices. We don't have a special app. We're not doing that. It's just a single user interface that scales to be usable both on mobile and desktop.
Mm-hmm. And really, when you design to be mobile first from the get-go, which we have, it puts you through a sort of challenge to make as clean a UI as you can, especially when you want the experience to be familiar both on the mobile and on the desktop. So it's really been a great advantage to us having made that decision early on.
And the thing I have to actually applaud is your explore button, because it gives you all of the possible sets and releases of products. For some things, even though I'm really versed in you know, magic releases, I didn't know some things were a thing, like Korokoro comics. I had no idea that was a thing.
Sure. We personally think that our explore page could use some more work. It's one of the stories that has been neglected for a little bit after we launched the minimal product 4 months ago, and it's just only recently we started giving it more love and care. But we think we can take it even further and further.
What do you plan to implement if that's possible to discuss?
Oh, for sure. The basic things like adding cards to your haves and wants from the card page, or showing more stats and information like the most recent trade prices, or what is the price you're offering, or whether you have this card or you don't have this card, or whether you want that card or don't. There's a lot of improvements. We have a whole list of things to do. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time.
Even this morning, we were looking at a user suggestion to have a way to browse with a next. So as you dig into a set, just click next, 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 rather than having to back out to the set page. And I can tell you that when I first got into EDH, actually, this was something I did all the time. I used a little program or a little app on iOS called Orcish Librarian, and it's no longer available. They stopped supporting it, but I just loved it. It was a clean UI, and it would just you could have it show you random cards. And so, as I was falling asleep at night, I would just go into a EDH-friendly set like Lorwyn and start looking for interesting cards, just with random, random, next, next, that might slide into a deck or give me some kind of inspiration to build a deck.
Was that your way of counting sheep?
It was my way of counting sheep and spending money.
At the same time, that's a win-win.
I mean, I used to spend many of hours just clicking on random on gatherers so I can actually feel the sentiment.
Mm-hmm. I always, so at one point, I went a bit crazy deep with my EDH collection, because a lot of the people I played with didn't actually have paper cards. And so I would I would pre-assemble the decks and then invite some casuals over, and we'd have some drinks, have some food, and play Magic. But at one point I had 30 EDH decks. I think that's the number. Is it 29 or 30 when you do every color combination?
That's what you're trying to go for.
Yeah. So I had that many decks. I don't say they were the strongest decks in the world, because I was stretching the collection a bit thin to do it, but I tried to make interesting experiences.
Yeah, I'm really, plus just a random thing, you know what I like about your page? There isn't, you know, a tier level which stops you from getting certain benefits of the page, as far as I can see.
No, there's not. However, we are going to be launching subscriptions, but ever since day one, when we first started talking about what CardSphere was going to be, we were dedicated to the idea that that we never wanted to artificially set a paywall. So other people, for example, have done things like you don't get to trade foils if you aren't a member, or you don't get to you don't get to restrict which countries you're allowed to trade with if you're not a member.
Or export. Things like this. We decided that we're never going to cripple our product's essential features to just extract money from our community. Mm-hmm. What we're really going for is providing really valuable, advanced features and supporting really advanced scenarios for people who really value trading, who trade a lot and spend a lot of time on CardSphere. We're going to make life a little easier for them, and then we will ask them for a small monthly subscription.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that you can expect to see in a couple of weeks, and we understand and we're committed to the idea is that we want as many people in the community as possible. So even once we do launch premium membership, you're going to be able to pay that out of your balance. So basically, you can trade cards to pay for your membership. And we're not taking anything away from the existing usability. We'll continue to expand on the features that are available for everyone. And from time to time, we will add more premium features.
I'm really, again, digging your layout. Sorry that I'm coming back to that, but I'm just really entranced by that. I can just go through all of the sets and just look at pretty names of the cards and just prices right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
I like the simplicity. I was one of the older users in PokerTrade, and I really like the simplicity of it. And this is even better because it's just in dollars, and I can actually, you know, I know what the dollar is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Can I just ask, what are you basing your prices on?
So we have multiple external sources where we gather pricing information. We don't share that information with anyone because we don't want anyone to be able to game the system.
Of course.
But I can tell you our pricing is an aggregate of multiple external sources. And Michael, maybe you can talk about our plans to possibly start folding in our own data as well.
Exactly. So over the last 4 months since the launch, we have accumulated enough trading data and that we can basically start mixing into the prices. So we're going to deviate from external sources more and more into into the CardSphere index. So those would be the prices that the cards are actually moving on CardSphere, the actual trades that are happening. So I think it's going to be beneficial for everybody because CardSphere is unique and with its unique economy and unique positioning between the buy list prices and the, let's call it TCG low or TCG mid. There is a sweet spot where CardSphere currently exists. And a lot of the times the external prices just don't make a lot of sense for CardSphere and have to be heavily adjusted. So we're thinking that why do we keep using those if we can produce our own stable and fair prices for a lot of the cards?
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, because I lived through another platform, Deckbox.org, stopping TCG player pricing and going to their own internal pricing, and that wasn't super successful. So I just want to underline that we're never fully going to eliminate external pricing as well. We'll always want that to calibrate against. And all of the changes to the pricing are going to be slow and monitored very carefully.
Very gradual.
Yeah.
Just a question that I thought of right now. Will there ever be an option to get sealed products?
There is now.
Yeah, we do let people offer sealed for the sets in standard and for the modern and for the master sets, and we're going to be expanding that over time.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was high demand from our users, and so I think we introduced it about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, it makes sense, because you, if you have enough points, would like to get some hard-to-get product that somebody might have, you know, already stashed away. And this is a nice way. This is a nice way to get the product and not get your price too much gouged.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think one of our first booster packs that got traded, the receiver pulled a Tarmogoyf as well. So I think that's a good omen.
I think it was a foil Tarmogoyf.
Was it foil?
I think.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Not so good for the sender, maybe.
I mean, that was a lottery, and the guy won the lottery, so...
Yeah. So the... And actually, there's a sort of related story there, but, and this is how wonderful our community is. As soon as the user told us that he had pulled a foiled Tarmogoyf from the pack that he received via Cardsphere, we're like, oh, post it on social media, you got to show people, this is fun, this is great. And he said, you know what? If I do that... I don't want to limit the person who sent me the pack. I don't want to limit his ability to send other packs, because people will say, oh, well, I'm never going to get a foil Tarmogoyf. I'm not going to take, you know, I don't want him to send me cards now. So so he kept it quiet just to protect the other trader and his ability to continue to send, which I thought was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still amazed that people think there is a correlation of value to the rest of the rest of the box
packs in the box,
which I think is ridiculous.
Well, it's the gambler's fallacy, right?
I know.
What I wanted to ask, if there was some problem with the trade, how does that get resolved? Because sooner or later, as more and more trades happen, there's going to be problems, and there's some problematic countries to send or to send from. So
there are problems with trades. We do have a dispute management system, and what happens is the users can flag. First of all, users can communicate with each other via a messaging system within the Cardsphere platform. And whenever a user has any kind of concern, they can choose to dispute the trade. Once the trade is disputed, the admins of Cardsphere, so Tom and Michael and myself, we get access to see the message history, and we also have a statistics dashboard that shows us all kinds of information about the two traders. So, for example, we see what percentage of their cards, of their shipments go missing, lots of other things, including breakdown of value. So we can really take a look for any patterns of abuse. And then what we do is we engage the two traders and try and talk them through coming to agreement on their own. Almost every single dispute that we've had, and I'll give you some numbers about the disputes in a moment, have been actually worked out by the users without our having to intervene and make any decision based on, you know, here are the absolute rules, this is what we think the card condition is. Usually people can come to an agreement and then tell us how to divide up the funds, and we just make it so. So of all the trades that have happened on Cardsphere, about 3% end up getting disputed, and most of those disputes, about 80% of those disputes, are about card condition. Card condition is a really subjective matter to talk about,
yep.
And people have very strong opinions about it. So that tends to be where most of the concerns are. I would say that less than 1% of the mail goes missing. And as an encouragement to everyone out there listening, I want to stress that I have not seen a greater amount of cards go missing via international trades.
Yeah, there's just a couple of countries that are really difficult to get your cards in or from, and that's it. I do apologize for the doorbell. But sure. my girlfriend's takeaway just came.
Taken.
Okay.
Taken. Yeah, but what I wanted to say, there's just a couple of, I've been trading for a couple of years now internationally, and there's maybe two or three countries that are really difficult to send stuff in, and that's about it.
So the ones that I hear a lot are Italy and Brazil.
Yep, and Argentina.
And in that quote. I actually hadn't heard Argentina. So... I don't know. I haven't seen any disputes come up for either of those countries, but I think that people already sort of avoid sending to them.
Yeah.
Cardsphere Brazil, the Brazilians have their own Facebook group set up for Cardsphere, and there's a lot of activity in Brazil. It just tends to stay within Brazil for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking that the Brazilian community is trying to break that perception, and we have no data to back the claim that, say, Brazil is a bad destination.
Mm-hmm.
It usually takes a week longer than for regular international trade, but we didn't have any major missing stuff that wasn't delivered.
One thing that I have to say is that Puka Trade had the advantage of being able to pay out insurance and be able to pay both people for the cards because it was just points they were printing.
Yeah.
That obviously led to lots of problems with their own economy, but I think the other thing that it did was encourage scammers. So I think that a lot of cards went missing because people knew that for the most part, the company wanted to pay out points to both parties to keep them in the system and hoping that they're going to keep paying for the membership or buying points, to supplement the trading, right?
Yeah, that's the feeling that I got in the end. I'm really sad that whole Puka Trade experiment has kind of flopped. And it keeps on flopping, no matter what they try to do. But I think your product might actually have, you know, a bright future because I'm liking what I'm seeing. Because you have the security of actually, you know, taking your money and clearing it away.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to, you know, correct all the mistakes we've seen multiple platforms make. And it's very ambitious, but with the help of our community, we've been doing pretty well so far. We have had people originally expressed some concerns about using real money, and we've been answering this question since day one. It's coming up a little less frequently, but in case your listeners don't know, I do want to stress that Cardsphere never touches its users' money. We hold the money only. The other thing we haven't discussed is that on each send, each trade that occurs, Cardsphere does take 1%. So if you use the Cardsphere like a trading platform, which is certainly what I do, I put cash in once to get it started, and then I'll never put more cash in or take any cash out. I just trade cards for other cards. Basically, you're paying a 1% trade transaction fee.
Yeah, this is pretty incredible. We're not aware of any other platform that would let you swap cards for cards with an overhead of 1%.
And right now, the 1% transaction fee, as well as the money that we recover when people cash out, that pays for the operations of our servers and our bank account fees. It pays for everything. And we've even been, you know, modestly profitable since day one.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't count our labor costs, which we're not counting yet.
I'm smiling.
The thing that I think you guys have going for is that community is backing you up because all things I've heard actually from you, about you from Reddit, mm-hmm. has been overwhelmingly positive.
For the most part, yes. We do get occasional burst of criticism that we're taking really seriously and are trying to address because behind every angry comment, there's a kernel of truth.
And a lesson for us to learn.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So to that point, someone came in to our Discord chat server and wanted to offer us their opinions. And we actually had a little bit of a problem because our users were, I think they felt they were defending us and doing the right thing. And we thank them for it. We love our hardcore committed users. But we actually wanted to make sure that we were fully understanding the person's comments. So Michael and I did a Skype call with that user on Monday, and we had, I think, an hour-long conversation just to make sure that we were bottoming out on all of that user's objections. And I think that what we learned from that phone call is we do have a bit of an education problem where we need to help our users understand the features that we've made available to solve some of their problems.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a perception that the pricing isn't very good because most people are offering less than the index price. And in some cases, people are offering way less than an index price. So some people might be offering to pay 20% of the value on a Liliana of the Vale, right? I would never send that card to that person. So I use our filters to make sure I'm never shown that offer.
Yeah, so we have a number of problems that we're going to address gradually going forward, and that is education problems, some perception problems, and even some of the pricing problems. But we're aware of those, and we are going to be moving in the direction of solving them.
Any other things that your users have pointed out as a criticism? Let's put it like that.
So, for example, some users were criticizing us for the poor ability or perceived poor ability of our platform to conduct trades in lower end cards under the dollar. So if you compare our market to, say, Puka Trade Market, they say they can get better value on their lower end cards with Puka Trade. And that is fine because the two markets are very different. They use very different currencies, and they're in different stages of their life. With Puka Trade, there is a lot of people who just want to get out of the platform and have very wide want lists, and they will take anything you can send them, no matter what. So this creates some artificial demand on that platform. And with CardSphere, because it's an open platform, the price is what it is, what people are willing to pay for those cards. If something costs 50 cents, but it's not a playable card in any format on earth, you know, maybe it's not a 50 cent card. Maybe it is a 5 cent card after all, no matter what TCG player mid says to you. So all of those discoveries that people make when they come to CardSphere could be off-putting for people who are unprepared for it or are somewhat uneducated in the prices and the trading. And this is where one of our goals is to make this education happen and correct people's expectations as they come to our platform. Is that, in all honesty, you know, there are good cards that are going to be in demand and high value and command a full price, and then there's going to be draft cards that are worthless. And there's no way we can fix that.
I mean, I'm liking the product you're giving, so I'm going to give it, you know, I'm going to give you a shot and actually put some of the things on lesser end, let's put it like that, as I have. So I'll see if people actually want things like that. Because somebody needs to start supplying, you know, all those uncommons or commons that people use a lot, but sometimes they can't get a hold of it that easily.
Yeah, we have – there's the low-end cards are moving, and you can see the prices. And a lot of the times, half of the times, they're moving at very decent prices. But keep in mind that a lot of the times, those offers are short-lived, and they get fulfilled really fast. So some people – have this concern, they go into CardSphere every week, they check it once, and maybe they don't get the 90% value for that couple of uncommons that they have, and they get upset and leave. And to them, I want to say that right now with CardSphere, this is a bit of an unrealistic expectation to be able to do that. So in order for you to move those cards, you either need to be honest about the value of those cards or be able to use those as throw-ins with the higher value cards or just have a wider have list and be able to send multiple cards in the same package to people to make it profitable for you.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do. And this is actually behavior that I've carried forward from Deckbox and Puka Trades being the main platforms I use. I actually love it. I get excited when I can send out a value card. For me, I don't actually like foils. So when I can move a $20 foil and then move four or five commons with it, this is what I live for as a trader. Because I would never get the value out of those four other cards, right? So, very exciting.
A lot of people don't realize that most of their commons and uncommons, they wouldn't be able to even buy a list. Those are with with their LGSs. That's bulk material. And being able to recover those couple of cents or 10 cents or whatever that might be from that box is actually valuable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, trust me, I know. I bought into a couple of auctions of people around in Croatia where there was a couple of good cards and there was a bunch of bulk. And mm-hmm. what the hell do I do with that bulk? That's the question. But this might be one of the ways out.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend's going to be happy because I'll be getting rid of some of the cards that are lying around.
So the only thing that makes me feel bad about using CardSphere is I used to save all my bulk and until I had a fat pack filled up, and then I'd find a kid to give it to.
Oh, yeah.
All that value is mine.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give you guys a shot and actually trade on it, because I've been missing that rush of sending a couple of cards and then losing some points or dollars and knowing that there's a package coming my way. That's mm-hmm. one of the thrills that's really hard to replicate with other forms of trading.
You know, I love coming home from a hard day's work and finding those envelopes in my mailbox. You know, it's a little happy moment in your day, and you don't know exactly which cards are in those envelopes, but, you know, you wanted them, that's for sure.
And it's best when it's, you know, from this country and that country and third country, just all over the world.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And for me, I'm actually the minority, probably. I don't send a lot of cards. I just don't have the time to package and everything. And to be honest, I don't have the time to play. But I still have this dream that if I maintain my modern collection, which is pretty good right now, I will be able to play someday when there's not a lot of work with CardSphere. I don't know if that day ever comes. And I still try to keep that collection up to date. So I add some money into the system from time to time. And instead of going hunting for those deals, bidding on eBay, trying to figure out where's the best price around the world for the cards that I want, I just put them on CardSphere. I set the price that I'm ready to pay for them, and I just walk away. And in 2 weeks, I start getting envelopes, and that's perfect for me personally, but that's just me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like a good way to actually trade cards. And there are some cards that I've been trying to, you know, to move in my community, but nobody wants it. So this could be a way for me to actually get rid of those cards.
Yeah, it's perfect for shallow magic markets, for smaller or remote communities and things like this, or weak LGS base. Or
yeah,
it expands people's abilities and to trade and play decks.
We hear this from a lot of people, people who are an hour away from a games shop, and they don't get to be face-to-face with people, and they've lost trust in other platforms. They're now invigorated and excited to be trading again.
Yeah, so
and that's what drives us. You know, we're making a modest, very modest profit right now, and we do want CardSphere to eventually be our full-time jobs. But in the meantime, knowing that we're making people happy and getting people excited about trading is really driving us on day after day.
It's those success stories that I hear every second day. It's, you know, that propel me forward.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're having this is one of the motives, because I used to be in a much smaller community than I'm here. I'm currently in the capital of Croatia. But I used to be in a much smaller community, and having things to deliver to me into, let's say, PukaTrade meant a world to me. And since PukaTrade is sinking and you seem to be having an actual good grasp of everything, this might actually help a lot of people who were in my situation as well.
Definitely. Definitely. As long as we do a better job at educating people and promoting our website and our platform, that's going to be the case. And that's our goal, and that's the plan and the motto for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
More features, make it better, and put it in front of more people.
And always, we are going to stay very available and very close with our community. I think that the platforms which have failed because they did not listen to what their users were telling them. I mean, when users tell you what they want, are they always correct? No, but they always deserve to be heard and listened to, and you need to seek out the root core of what their problem is. Because when they're incorrect, they're still correct about something. You just need to find out what it is.
Yeah, there is a reason why they're complaining about the things that they're complaining.
For sure. So we've been putting in a lot of effort to stay close with people, and we've had a lot of conversations. One of the most amazing strengths about our co-founder, Tom, is that he can speak at length to people and is really good at figuring out what people are really trying to get at, what people are really asking for.
Well, I think that we're going to be championing you guys from now on, because I'm liking what I'm hearing and I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Well, even if you're not championing us, if we're doing something wrong, we welcome you to talk to us about it. And, well, yeah, and exactly. That's the same for everyone. We want to hear what we're not doing to meet your needs.
Mm-hmm.
We only ask that people do keep in mind that we're a very small team, and we are moving slowly and steadily. We wish we could give you everything that we have envisioned tomorrow, but you'll just have to be patient with us. And I invite people to look at our change log, which shows that we have been releasing new features and functionality week after week for the past 4 months.
Okay, I think I'm actually going to, next couple of days, do a couple of trades to see how the whole thing goes.
Great.
And if you say what?
I said great, and we appreciate that.
And if people want to contact you, what's the best place for them to do it?
We have, I think, 10 million ways for people to get in touch with us. We have our Reddit sub, and that's got sort of the history of Cardsphere, because we really started out of Reddit, and you can see our progress over the last year. We have a Discord server, Facebook, Twitter. You can reach us by email. I think a couple of users have my phone number. So, I mean, there's lots of ways, and you can reach us just by going to cardsphere.com. All the links to all the ways to contact us are at the bottom there.
Okay, good. Is there anything else you want to say to the listeners?
I'd just like everyone to come and give us a try. We've inherited a lot of sort of trust issues from other platforms, but all we're asking is the opportunity for everyone to give it a shot, see how it works for you, and let us earn you as a community member. And we're happy to talk to anyone about anything, anytime.
Yeah, honestly, again, sure. What I've been hearing from you about you guys, there's been nothing but praise, so you don't have to worry about damaging community.
Great. And keep an eye on us, because we are looking for solutions to make things a little bit more global as we grow our community. I would recommend people to remember, if they've got local trading to go to, so people at an LGS, you can use Cardsphere for those local trades as well, and just, you know, when you go to F&M, trade the cards instead of putting them in the mail. That removes a lot of, you know, the concerns about mailing things out, and it's something that people like to do. You mix a little bit of the effort-free trading with some of that face-to-face socializing. So there's lots of ways to use it, even if you're in isolated communities. And, we're happy to be trading ourselves.
Even though you don't have any chances to play at all anymore, but...
That's my situation.
Yeah. We're hoping to get... to get some streaming going on Twitch as another way to raise visibility. So I occasionally do play Magic Online.
Oh, poor man.
If anyone wants to play with me. I'm able to get some of those games in. It's more the in-paper with in-person with paper that hasn't been happening.
Oh, and poor man that you have to play an MTGO.
That's it.
All right, then. I think that has been it for this time, but I hope we'll get to see you guys or hear from you guys soon enough with a bit more of success, even more success stories. I hope you guys grow.
Well, we do too. Thanks a lot for having us on, Igor, and say hi to Niksha for us. And once I am a little bit more free with my time, You know, maybe one of these days we'll figure out a way to play some EDH together, okay?
Oh, sure thing. And honestly, guys, if you ever want, you know, a platform to speak upon, feel free to contact us. We'll make some kind of arrangement.
Awesome. Thank you very much, and we'll let you go at this point.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thank you for reaching out. I was surprised that you even, you know, figure out who the hell we are, because I always see us as a really small podcast. So if we can help you even a bit to, you know, get a couple of more users, I'll be happy to do that.
For now, happy to support you.
Yeah. For now, it's a two-way street. We're talking to a lot of small YouTubers, small podcasters, because all the ones that have the large communities are sponsored, and we're happy to help grow the other content creators. You know, we're in it together, building a better community.
Yeah, we know how it feels to be the grassroots project.
Yeah, and as I said, we're going to be championing on you guys, and, you know, giving you as much exposure as we can.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I think this has been it for this episode, and, you know, talk to you guys later, Dan.
Take care.
All right, see ya.
Bye-bye.